This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to a very special edition of the Division 3 podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, joined by Lynchburg editor Josh Davey.
Nice. Well played. Well played.
We're excited about the bracket that was just unveiled on Selection Sunday. We got games going on. The first round, the play-in round, or whatever you want to call it, is happening Tuesday night, followed by what is called the NCAA second round on Wednesday. And then we move into some really key matchups on Saturday and beyond. Josh, this was a really, really interesting bracket, to say the least. What's your major takeaway from it?
First takeaway, right, let's start on a positive note. It's going to be awesome. You know, everyone talks about the D1 bracket and all these games. And these games, these second round games that we're calling them, right, the first round technically is Tuesday, are going to be unbelievable. There are very few games when I'm looking at this that are, I'm like, oh, this team's going to roll on this team. There are so many good teams in Division III, and to see the culmination of this finally coming together is what's so exciting, right? There are definitely some little gripes we may have with teams that should have been in, shouldn't have been in, got home games, maybe shouldn't have got home games, whatever the case may be, in the North and the South. I know we'll get to all that. But at the end of the day, as a D3 fan, you know, putting your allegiances to your teams aside, there's a lot to be excited about, and these next couple weeks are going to be amazing.
Looking at this, do you expect to see a handful of upsets in the second round on Wednesday?
It depends. Like, I don't know.
And by upsets, I mean the away team beating the host.
Right. I think that, you know, that's if that's how you're going to define upset, then yes, I think there will be. You know, I could see a handful of teams, and I'll wait to dive into some specifics in the second round. But absolutely. I mean, you got some really good teams traveling to, you know, all over the country. You know, again, just I'll highlight a couple, right? You have Stevenson going to Ithaca. You have Lynchburg going to Dickinson. Christopher Newport going to Roanoke. You know, I think even like an Illinois Wesleyan is a team we talk about a lot. I think that Denison game will be competitive for quite some time. In the North, you have some great second round games where we'll eventually get to see some of these NESCAC teams play against each other. So it's going to be awesome. I think Cabrini, Colorado College is going to be another good one. So there's games all over the place that I think are going to be super competitive. You know, I know we'll break down each game in a little more depth later in the podcast here. But I mean, you know, if you're going to define upset as the away team winning, I would be shocked if that wasn't the case. And I think it's going to be a very common theme as we evaluate some of these games on Wednesday evening.
We're pumped about this. One of the, you know, most interesting aspects of this bracket is where York was put. So later on this podcast, you know, Josh and I will discuss that. But later on this podcast, we have Coach Brandon Childs kind of breaking down his spot, what it means for his team, and how his team is approaching a very difficult road to the NCAA championship. Despite an excellent season that they had in the regular season, they lost in the CAC championship to Salisbury. Josh, before we delve into that, snubs in terms of teams that didn't make the bracket that maybe had a case to do it, or kind of the last team in here. You know, it seems to me that CAC number three team, Christopher Newport, was the last, you know, at large, you know, Pool C team into this bracket. Who did they bump out?
I think, again, not to, I'm going to really honestly try not to talk about Lynchburg as much as I can, but them winning the ODAC knocked F&M out. I think F&M, Franklin and Marshall, is the first team out. They were 12-4. When you look at their resume and you compare it to CNU, CNU had some wins in the beginning of the year that, you know, you have to look at the full body resume, right? It's not the recency thing. You have to look at what they did throughout the whole year. CNU is 14-4 with their losses coming to Roanoke, Salisbury, York, Salisbury, all NCAA tournament teams. And wins, you know, look at their big wins are Washington and Lee, Hampton, Sydney. And those are really the two big ones, you know, when you look at those two. And if you're going to evaluate Franklin and Marshall, you know, they are 12-4. Their really only big win, you know, their loss is coming to W&L, Gettysburg, Dickinson, and Dickinson. Their really only big win was Lynchburg, which was the first game of the season, and that wasn't a big win until Lynchburg became ODAC champ. So I get it, you know, and when you're looking at putting the teams in, you can't look at who would beat who on any given day, because I do think that F&M, you know, if F&M and CNU played 10 times, I think F&M would win the better of that. You know, I think they win 7 or 8 times, but CNU, when you know you're comparing resumes, has the better resume, so I understand it, and you know, it sucks for Coach Cavallaro and those guys because they really had a great season, and you know, they lose some seniors and Sean Rogers and Harry Rice and some of those guys, but just sort of how the chips fall, and that's why you strap it up every game and play every game. And, you know, if they could have pulled out one of those Centennial Conference wins, a win over a Gettysburg or a Dickinson, I think we're talking about F&M in here, not CNU, but that's not where we're at right now.
Yeah, and this is a team that we featured in the magazine, you know, in kind of the NCAA preview issue in February. The headline was Great Expectations on that. You know, obviously they didn't live up to them this year, a great season, but just on the outside looking in. You know, to me it's the head-to-head. When you compare resumes between CNU and F&M, head-to-head, CNU beat Washington and Lee, F&M lost to Washington and Lee. That's just kind of one of those unfortunate scheduling things for F&M in terms of, you know, CNU got them at the very first game of the year when Washington and Lee was kind of sorting itself out and had a string of losses there. F&M gets them the beginning of March when WNL starts to turn things around, but you know, across all levels, it doesn't matter when you play these games. The games in February count as much as the games in early, you know, April, as the games in late April, as, you know, unless it's a conference tournament game, as much as the games in May do. So you gotta come to play every week.
Yeah, Kyle Devitt keeps talking about on his and Aburn's podcast, you know, win your games. And that's what it comes down to. You know, I genuinely think that if F&M flips one of these L's into a W, whether it's WNL, Gettysburg, or Dickinson, they're the team we're talking about getting in there. So it's unfortunate, but for the Diplomats. But you know, congrats to Mikey Thompson. We had him on recently, and I'm sure those guys were fired up on Sunday evening to find out that they get to play, and then they get to play a team that they've already played and lost by one. So they got to have some confidence going into that game against Roanoke.
Definitely, and just as a general comment, it's one of my biggest gripes about people complaining about brackets is, you know, saying that, well, this team, you know, you've seen it in the Division I bracket, you know, all over on the ESPN guys were griping so much about how, you know, well, Villanova hasn't, you know, won a big game in the past 5 weeks. It doesn't matter when you win them. It's a body of work. You know, you're not measuring the eye test of how hot a team looks right now. This sport, from week to week, a team can look hot and cold. So if your last kind of measure of a team is the last week of the season where they look awesome, maybe 8 days before that they look terrible. And maybe 8 days from that they're going to look terrible again. It's too much to go off of that kind of eye test for picking these NCAA tournament teams. You need to have an objective criteria. So not an easy job by this committee, but looking elsewhere through the bracket, you know, we've referenced York, and that's kind of been the thing that the people on social media have been talking about a lot. It doesn't only affect York, you know, where they're seated in the north. They move them up to the north because of the amount of Pool C teams from the south, and then, you know, combined with York's geography being in central Pennsylvania, makes, on a geographic sense, you know, makes some sense to put York up in the north.
Yep.
But, you know, they have a really tough road ahead of them, you know, for a team that, you know, only had two losses and was in the conversation for a top seed in the South. You know, they're going to open up against Western New England on Wednesday night. The third round game on Saturday could potentially be them hosting Amherst. Amherst, a team that could be a Final Four team.
Absolutely. That's going to be a battle.
Then, you know, if kind of chalk holds, they would have to face RIT in the quarterfinals, which we've all talked about is, you know, the big bad wolf of Division III lacrosse right now, and the team that, you know, I guess you would presume is the favorite to win it all. And if they get over that giant, they would have to beat Tufts in the semifinals to get to the championship, where inevitably they're going to play Salisbury for a third time, because that's just how Division III lacrosse works. So they have some rifle gripes with the way that they were positioned in this tournament. You know, Coach Childs, we talked to him later, and he kind of embraces it as a challenge and kind of flips the script and say, hey, it's not bad news for us. It's bad news for RIT. It's bad news for Tufts. It's bad news for Amherst. Josh, what's your take on this?
You know, if I was putting this bracket together, I would have had York the second seed in the South. So for them to get bumped to the North and then also be the 3 seed, you know, I get in the North, they probably are the 3 seed, you know, with Tufts there and an RIT. But, you know, when you look at the potential of them being the 2nd seed in the South and where Salisbury is and the route that they have to go versus the route that they have right now, that's where, you know, I have issues is, you know, Salisbury gets a play-in winner of Eastern and Morrisville State, and then they play, you know, a Roanoke CNU, you know, two teams they're very familiar with, and, you know, just as York would have been. So, you know, Brandon Childs is a resilient guy and, you know, a guy we've talked about many, many times in this podcast. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say. But, yeah, you know, we have a York alum in here, Mike Gilbert, and he came in hot on Monday morning.
He was not happy.
Livid. So, you know, it's a challenge. At the end of the day, you know, you want to be the best. You gotta beat the best. So, you know, obviously there are paths when you look at this bracket that are easier than others. Gettysburg being, you know, one that jumps off the page. But, look, if York wants to win a national championship, they're going to have to beat these teams one way or the other. You know, it may not be in the second, third, and quarterfinal round, but one way or the other, if they want to get to the championship weekend, they're going to have to be playing at a high level and beating these teams. So, you know, if they're going to do it, awesome. And, you know, best of luck to them. I'm really pulling for them in the North.
Again, I feel worse almost for RIT, you know, the clear top seed in the country. They should have a pretty clear path to the semifinals as the undefeated top seed in the entire bracket.
And you have to think
they don't.
Yeah, and, right. And then you have to think about also, like, if Salisbury beat York, you know, Salisbury beats York in the CAC final. If York beats Salisbury, where does Salisbury fall? Because Salisbury geographically is nowhere near York. So would Salisbury get bumped to the North? You know, so that one game, the last game of the season, really had a dramatic effect on the way this bracket shape, you know, turned out.
Let's talk a little bit about Salisbury. You know, this team has been, the standard is just so high for this program because we're talking about a team that's 16-3 with, you know, those two early losses were one goal losses. They had the really bad loss to York, but we're talking about them like, you know, something terrible happened to this program. Right. It's just three losses and they've bounced back from it. That's just how high the standard is, you know, over there in Salisbury. Really, this team, you know, I can think, like we've said the whole time along, they're dangerous now. You know, yeah. I feel like they've learned to play disciplined lacrosse, you know, through this kind of win streak since that York loss. I think that was really a wake-up call for just how penalized they were, how undisciplined they were in terms of just taking care of the ball. I think you've seen them clean that up a lot. You know, their offense seems to be less reliant on a guy like Garrett Reynolds, who was just kind of, I don't know, my impression was they were kind of standing around, getting the ball to him and just letting him shoot. That's not really a recipe for success. So I'm really scared for teams that are in Salisbury's path right now. You know, this is the team that wins all these championships for a reason. And with the way that their bracket is setting up, you know, they don't have an easy stretch by any means, but it's not unheard of for them to make a run to the championship here.
Yeah, we definitely hold them to a really high standard. And, you know, we've been critical of them on this podcast. They're sort of like, in my mind, like the LeBron James, right? Like right now, LeBron is just going off, putting up ridiculous numbers every single night. People are like, yeah, he's playing well. But like, if you look at it in terms of the rest of the league, he's by far the best player. We just expect greatness out of him every night now, you know? Like, what's it going to take for him to, for you to be like, wow, LeBron crushed it tonight. You know, he's going to score 60 points. Sort of like that with Salisbury, you know?
Right.
We set the bar so high right now that, you know, they have three losses and we're like, oh my God, Berkman must be, he's so used to, you know, just managing, like, okay, we're going to come out and smoke this team. We've caught a couple losses. We got to be able to right the ship a little bit. But it's like, you really have lost three games. And you know, we probably were too overly critical of them early.
Well, you were. I wasn't.
For sure. And I'm always going to be. I'm always going to be, Matt. But, you know, looking at them, you know, they'll roll through their, you know, whoever they get, Eastern and Morrisville State. And, you know, and then you're looking at a game, Christopher Newport team, you know, if they beat Roanoke, that they'll be their third straight game. Or a Roanoke team that, you know, is, you know, they're very familiar with. They play every year. You know, Roanoke lost in the ODAC final. But, you know, will be a great game. And, you know, as you look at that bottom half of the South bracket, there's a lot of teams that Salisbury is very familiar with. So, it's going to be interesting. And I think that Salisbury right now would be, you know, when you look at Gettysburg's path and you look at where Salisbury is, the 1 and 2 seeds, you know, they definitely got their money's worth in terms of what you get for being the number one and number two seed.
Definitely. And, you know, I think it's pretty clear that Gettysburg has the easiest path to, you know, the NCAA semifinals here. That first matchup that they're going to have in the second round, though, it's a little trickier than they should have for a first seed. You know, I think that, you know, Morrisville State should be there as opposed to Elizabethtown. You know, Elizabethtown's going to be a team that, you know, should they beat John Carroll in Tuesday night's game or Tuesday afternoon's game, they're going to give Gettysburg some trouble. You know, I still think Gettysburg wins that game, but it's not going to be a cakewalk for them. Other than that, though, I think Gettysburg has the best path to the Final Four.
Yeah, Elizabethtown, Chris Brzezinski, their head coach, is a former Gettysburg assistant, so very familiar with their program. Yeah, and they've had a great season. You know, they won the Landmark Conference champs for the second straight year. You know, I think it'll be a close game in the beginning, and then I just think that Gettysburg has too much depth. They're going to end up pulling away at the end for sure, but I agree. I think Morrisville State should have been there, and they should have been swapped, and then it would have been interesting talking about Elizabethtown playing Salisbury as well. But, you know, that's a team last year. Elizabethtown played F&M in the first round, and it was a 9-8 game. So they're a team on the rise. What Chris Brzezinski's been able to do there is phenomenal in his first 2 years, and I think he's one of those guys. He's the next. You know, we talk about Childs and some of these guys who are these, you know, premier coaches in D3. He's the next guy. So excited about that, and congrats to them. And I think that'll be an amazing game. I expect them to beat John Carroll and definitely give Gettysburg a little bit of a sweat here in the first half of that game. But, you know, talking about Gettysburg's road, you know, then they would play the winner of Rhodes and Huntington, which, I just don't see it being an issue for Gettysburg. You know, and I said this to you earlier, Matt, is I love this the bracket, the way it shapes out, but – you know, I know there's issues with travel and costs of where people can go. And, you know, in some ways I'm excited about it, but also it sucks to see, you know, possible third round matchups being teams that will be playing for the third time. You know, like how many times does Ohio Wesleyan really need to play Denison? You know, like do they really have to play each other in this bracket? Like I get that there's cost, you know, for travel and stuff like that. You know, how many times does Salisbury have to play Christopher Newport? You know, there's a potential of another Lynchburg W&L game, you know? So I get that there's, you know, that travel is a large part of it, but in some ways, I'm excited about it. In some ways, I'm just like, all right, I'd love to see, you know, Roanoke play Gettysburg. You know, teams that haven't played each other this year, I think, is also really exciting. And what we love about May Madness. So, it's going to be great. But I definitely think Gettysburg definitely has the easiest path to Gillette.
It's the D3 life. Sometimes you got to deal with the travel considerations. Now, we've talked a lot about the top seeds, the favorites. With this NCAA second round that's being held on Wednesday, what are some of these matchups that are going to be the most evenly contested here?
Let's just get it out of the way first, right? Dickinson-Lynchburg, I think, is going to be the best game of the first round. Both teams are two of the hottest teams in the country right now. You know, Dickinson was a team that I would have thought would have lost to F&M in that first round of the second round of the Centennial Conference Tournament. That was a great game, really high scoring. And then they take it to Gettysburg at Gettysburg. So they're riding high right now. Dylan Mayer is just a point machine for them right now. They're making saves in the net. They're winning faceoffs. You know, everything's sort of clicking for them. And Lynchburg was a team, obviously, listeners are familiar with for, you know, whether they like it or not with obviously as an alum. So, you know, I watched their W&L game, and they were able to win faceoffs, and that was a big thing for them, you know, and there's a lot of plays in the middle of the field they weren't making, and they made them. And same with Roanoke. They dominated Roanoke. They were more poised. They won more faceoffs. They had great possessions on offense. C.J. Santora is right now is hot. He's making he had 19 saves against W&L. So I think this is going to be an amazing game. Coach Webster and Coach Kadelka are two coaches that are very familiar with each other. They're very good friends. So it's a 4 p.m. game on Wednesday up in Carlisle. I think it's going to be an amazing game. Fast-paced, lots of saves, lots of goals. That's definitely the highlight for me for a lot of other reasons than just, you know, Dickinson-Lynchburg. I think it's the best and has the potential to be the most exciting game in the first round.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are circling that, so it's not just you. But I got to say, I think Dickinson rolls in this one. I think there's an aspect of what Lynchburg did that it's easy to kind of have a deflating loss right after that, if that makes any sense. You know, they used all their energy just to get to this point, and then now that they're in the tournament, it's easy to see a letdown, especially against a team like Dickinson, which I love. I love this Dickinson team. I love the way they play in the middle of the field. Great goaltending. You know, faceoff's a little bit of a concern. They didn't do well against Gettysburg in the faceoff category, but they still won. I think they're a team that can make goals out of nothing. You know, they can have a broken play and they're going to score a goal. You know, they can get a key ground ball or, you know, cause a turnover on the ride, do whatever they need to do and score. I think Dickinson kind of rolls in this one.
I think your point, though, is what makes me most excited as a Lynchburg alum about this game is the faceoffs. Is that's been their weakness all year and has been dating back to 2015 and, back to, you know, with Bobby Dissler and then back to 2012 with Jeff Schwartz and Matt Jernak and some of those guys. So I think that the, you know, mucking up at the faceoff is really going to be a huge part of this game, and whoever can win that battle definitely has an advantage. I want to tell one quick story. I'll just I'm going to get this out of the way, but I think it's a really cool indication of just the people in Division III lacrosse and how much they love this game and what it represents. Thursday, the day before Lynchburg played W&L, which if Lynchburg lost, clearly would have been their last game of the season.
Mathematically would have been the end of their season.
No doubt. Like, yeah, there are absolutely no questions. All right. They probably would not even have been 500 at that point. So A former Lynchburg alum, his father passed away, and the funeral was Thursday. And without doubt, Coach Kudelka and some of his staff drove 4.5 hours up, spent 2 hours at a funeral, 4.5 hours back down to practice, spent 10 hours, 11 hours, you know, traveling and being in Baltimore the day before the potential last game. And I think that just shows, you know, the kind of people that are down there and the people all over, you know, the top coaches are really close. Like I talked about Webster and Kudelka, you know, when you talk about Coach Childs and Gene McCabe at WNL and Gettysburg, Coach Janzik, Coach Kudelka. So I just think, you know, we're talking about D3 and what makes D3 so special. And I just wanted to, you know, share that story because I think it's really cool that the day before potentially, you know, a season ending loss, you know, there was no doubt that they were going to spend all their day in the car, you know, have a late night practice because that's just what you do for your guys, which I think is a really cool sentiment.
Great story. And, you know, these guys definitely all pay it forward, you know, just certainly it's, you know, not quite as on the scale of that. But, you know, just the other day, yesterday, Coach Keegan Wilkinson at Marist, I saw him tweet out that he spent the day at Salisbury, you know, kind of learning kind of some tools of the trade from Coach Berkman.
Right.
And this is the week that they're preparing for an NCAA tournament game. Just a few days before an NCAA tournament game. So you don't get to this level by kind of putting the blinders on. You know, it's not what people, that football mentality of like, I'm going to go sit, you know, in my office and watch film and just focus on me. You don't get to that point by doing that in this sport. So it's really good to see these guys kind of, you know, live for others in some ways as much as they're preparing for their own challenges ahead.
So what's your, if after Dickinson Lynchburg, what's your most exciting second round matchup?
Well, let's stick in the South first before we go to the North, because I think the North has a ton of them.
Yep.
I kind of like Illinois Wesleyan versus Denison. You know, I think Denison still wins that, but I think that's going to be a really close game. I think that the way that Illinois Wesleyan plays is going to be really tough for Denison to kind of game plan for on this turnaround. So I think they're going to give him some trouble. You know, I think that's going to be a really good game. I think the best game, most evenly matched, will be Roanoke Christopher Newport. I see Christopher Newport winning that one. But I'm excited to see, you know, I think I'm going to have my primary stream be Illinois Wesley and Denison for at least a half of that game while I'm watching.
It's hard to not be intrigued by that game when you look at some of these numbers that Illinois Wesley has put up on offense. I'm just going to read some high goal totals here. 29, 26, 20, 22, 27, 24, 28, 30, 24, 26, 35, 23, 25. I mean, those are monster numbers on offense. So, you know, it's just going to be a way, can they stop people? You know, they played Christopher Newport back in March and scored 14 goals but gave up 24. So, Denison, Peter Petroff, one of the best attackmen in the country. I expect him to have a day. I agree, though. That's definitely a game that's intriguing. And then you mentioned Roanoke, Christopher Newport. I think it's going to be a great one. You know, it was an 8-9 game earlier this season. You know, Coach Thompson's definitely going to have his guys ready to go. I think that they're going to be a little rattled to start off. You know, they're a team that's a first-time NCAA tournament for quite some time, if ever. I'm not exactly sure the info on that. But Roanoke's a team that is been there before. Coach Pilot is one of the most legendary coaches in the sport of lacrosse, not even just D3. They're going to be poised. They've been there before. I think Roanoke pulls it out. But I do think it's going to be a great game, and I expect that second half to be a real battle once Christopher Newport sort of settles in.
Yeah, it's the second trip for the captains to the NCAA tournament. In 2013 was the last time that they earned a bid there. So it's been a long time. I mean, these guys, obviously, it's the first time for them.
Yep.
Everyone that's involved with the program right now has never been to the NCAA tournament. Moving up to the North, you know, I think there's a lot more second-round stuff that's really intriguing. In the North bracket, we talked about York, Western New England. You know, I think York wins that one pretty easily. But Ithaca Stevenson, a really intriguing one. You know, Stevenson was written off pretty early in the year after they had that string of close losses against really good teams. And then they've done, you know, like you would expect Stevenson to do and kind of run through their conference there. I don't know what to make of this one. You know, I kind of like Ithaca. I just love their staff so much, and I think that they're going to be they're going to pull through on this one. But this is certainly one of the better matchups in the North.
Yeah, Ithaca is 15-3 with their losses coming to RPI, RIT, and then RIT a second time. And when I say they lost to RIT a second time, they got throttled.
Right.
It was 3-23. So I think that this is an away game for Stevenson. It's up in Ithaca, up in upstate New York. So I think that Stevenson has the advantage here. Again, I know that it's a long trip for them. They have traveled before. I believe they traveled to NAS a few years ago, or I know they played NAS in the first round as they were also in the North bracket in the past, so they're familiar with being in the situation. I think Stevenson is you know, again, their conference is not the most competitive. You know, they obviously went on that, you know, 0-5 start and then lost to Lynchburg back in early April. But they rattled off, you know, a lot of really nice wins here, not a lot of close games, but a couple here and there that really worry me. I think this is going to be a really close game. I think these are two teams who are very good teams, but they're not to the level of the RITs, Yorks, mm-hmm. Salisbury's by any means. So I think that's what makes this a really intriguing first round matchup. So if I had to pick right now, I think Stevenson, again, just they have the swagger. They're getting it back a little bit. Coach Canabin, one of the best in the game. You know, they're going to be physical. It's a team that Ithaca's not used to playing, the way they play up-tempo, fast, big, physical, strong. So I give the advantage to Stevenson in this one, but I do think it's going to be a phenomenal game.
You've mentioned a few times Cabrini, Colorado College. Why is that?
So what's really intriguing me about this Colorado College-Cabrini matchup is Colorado College has been here before. They've traveled. They're used to traveling. So I don't think the travel aspect of this is something that's that, you know, going to throw them off, right? There are not a lot of D3 teams out where in Colorado, so they've been there. Coach Sean Woods has been there a long time. He's used to this. You know, I always lean towards sort of the senior leaders when it comes to NCAA tournament, right? Robbie Stern is a tackman from California for them. He's our leading point getter, 48 goals, 22 assists, 70 points total. So I think that there's something there. He's going to be the guy for them, and you know, his senior leadership is going to be huge. You know, they're making a lot of saves in the goal too. Andrew Harwood, sophomore, is saving almost 60%. I think that's a big part of it. When you're looking, you know, you get down to the nuts and bolts of what gets you wins in the NCAA tournament. You know, making saves and having that senior leadership are two things that I think are huge. You know, Cabrini is a team we've talked about a lot. You know, only a few losses this season to Stevenson and Salisbury. They're only two losses. I think this is intriguing because I think it starts out as a really close game. I think Colorado College is going to be fired up, getting off a plane. Like I said, they've been here before. Cabrini obviously has too, and has sort of always underperformed in the NCAA tournament. We talked about them, you know, throughout the regular season as being like, oh, Cabrini's the number three team. But they just don't play, you know, towards the end, a tough enough schedule that keeps them playing their sharpest, I think. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You want to be playing your best and playing the best teams towards the end, and they just roll through their conference. You know, they haven't played a top team since early April, you know, over a month ago from recording this podcast. You know, they played Centenary, Gwinnett Mercy, Marywood, Immaculata, Centenary, Gwinnett Mercy. Every single game was a more than a 10-goal win. And I think that you have to be playing your best lacrosse and keeping that sharpness. You know, when I talk about Lynchburg beating WNL and Roanoke, that's why I think they're hot right now. They're playing and beating some of the best teams. So I think Colorado College is going to come in and surprise them. I do think Cabrini will end up winning, but I think it's going to be a really great game and one that people are going to be surprised when they see the final score.
Definitely. And you know, like you said, the Cavaliers, the last time they played a ranked opponent was April 7th. They're 16-2. They have losses to Salisbury and Stevenson. Probably overall have played a more competitive schedule when you look at the high-end teams that they've played, but they haven't played those teams in so long. So definitely one to watch in this second round here. To me, though, the biggest game in the North, it's got to be Wesleyan hosting Cortland. You know, we talked a lot about how there's a lot of teams that are, at least when you look through further into the bracket, there's going to be a lot of rematches in this bracket. This is not one. This is one that these teams haven't played since the semifinals in 2007, which is pretty shocking to me. But I guess it makes sense given that Wesleyan's NESCAC schedule and all of that. Interesting teams. Cortland is down by its standards with six losses on their schedule. Wesleyan's 14-3, you know, one of the top teams in the NESCAC, which is essentially just means one of the top teams in the country.
Yep.
14-3. They got a pool C bid. You know, Cortland has got to find ways to deal with not only this backer zone that Wesleyan plays, but also, you know, this offense that has one of the best players in the country on it. So to me, I think Wesleyan wins this one pretty handily.
I completely agree. I think, you know, and we talked about it in the past couple weeks, you know, when you're talking about playing Tufts and some of these teams for the second and third time, they're familiar with this zone. But this is probably something Cortland hasn't faced maybe all season. And, it, you know, to beat a zone, you have to be really patient and you have to be really disciplined. And I'm not saying Cortland is not that. But I'm saying in NCAA tournament, when tensions are high and you go down by a couple goals to a really prolific scoring offense, it's really tough to give up that 15-yard shot that you think looks great, but you know that that's exactly what Wesleyan wants. They want to scoop it up and go the other way. So I think as you're playing teams that are more unfamiliar with another in the NCAA tournament, that lends itself to Wesleyan until you get to playing, you know, the possible Amherst and Tufts and teams that you've played, you know, two times already this season. So I agree. I think Wesleyan runs away with this one.
Well, if they if Cortland wants to give them a fight, they're going to probably need some of their Trimino. So maybe we'll send a case of that up to date here. 7 grams of whey protein. We're drinking it right now. I've got the strawberry lemonade in front of me while we're doing this podcast. Apologies if you keep hearing me sip on the microphone. No sugars, no carbs, no fats, only 28 calories. Essential B vitamins to fuel your game. It's ideal before, during, or after your workout. Hydrate with a beverage as versatile as you are. Play hard, not hungry. Josh, how much more of this do we have coming through the office?
Hopefully some more soon. I just did a count right before this. There are 16 left. We got a shipment of over 100. So it is it's going fast. There's one more case that still needs to be put in the fridge. So I'll have to hit my guys up from Trimino and see what we can do to get us through this final stretch of Lacrosse Unlimited May Madness.
Yeah, we're going to need it here through May in terms of we're going to have to take a case of this up to Gillette with us. You know, those long nights writing in the hotel outside of Foxborough. This stuff tastes great. You know, it's not just water. It's, you know, protein-infused water, replenishes muscle, really good stuff, and increases energy and endurance. Make sure you go to Amazon.com and order a case, or go to a CVS store and pick up some. Trimino protein-infused water. Protein never tasted so good. All right, Josh, before we get into Coach Child's prediction time, you know, let's go through and just go down the bracket, the one you can print out on InsideLacrosse.com. Go to the Lacrosse Unlimited May Madness page. Up at the top are all of the brackets, you know, from D1, D2, D3, and all the women's brackets as well. Print that out or go to NCAA.com. The third round, you know, who do we have winning these second round games Wednesday and advancing to this weekend's third round? We'll start from the top. Do you want to go first in the North?
Yeah, sure. So RIT will be there. They will beat the winner of Albion New England College. And I'm going to start this, excuse me, with a little bit of an upset. I think Springfield's going to take it to Stevens. I think Stevens has had a little too easy this year. I think they're good, not great. And I think Springfield's going to beat Stevens in that second round. And then we'll have an RIT Springfield third round matchup on May 12th.
Looking good. I've got, I mean, this is going to be a lot of chalk for me. You know, I know it's boring, but RIT Stevens in that third round for me. Then, you know, I think the next matchups are pretty clear. York versus Amherst in the third round there. I can't see any scenario where that doesn't happen. Going down is where it gets a little tricky. You know, like we just talked about, I see Wesleyan advancing pretty handily against Cortland. I just really like Cabrini, and I like Coach Colfer and just what they do, so I'm going with Cabrini winning that one.
I agree, and the thought of a Wesleyan-Cabrini game, such a prolific scoring offense against that zone, I think is going to be an insane game, and that's what I get so excited about, is these third-round games are just going to be, you know, they're top 10 matchups all over the board, so I agree. Wesleyan-Cabrini will be a doozy. If we bump down to the next one, we talked about Ithaca-Stevenson already. I picked Stevenson. And I expect Tufts to handle the winner of Merchant Marine and Johnson and Wales. I expect it to be Merchant and Marine. So in that third round, we have a Stevenson-Tufts matchup, which was supposed to be a matchup this year, but got postponed due to some weather in the Baltimore area. So we finally get that matchup we were not rewarded with earlier this season.
Right, and that was that game would have been played when Stevenson was kind of in the middle of that murderer's row of top teams that they were playing that they just could not get over the hump with. I don't think we're going to get that rematch. I think it's going to be Tufts versus Ithaca in that third round game on May 12th. Moving down, you know, we've said Gettysburg has a pretty good path. You know, I think they'll be tested a little bit by Elizabethtown, but advance there pretty handily. And I see them taking on Rhodes.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Rhodes call. And, you know, we've talked about, like you said, Gettysburg having sort of the easiest path to Gillette. So, Gettysburg Rhodes, and then I think Gettysburg cruises from there over them as well. So bumping down one, Ohio Wesleyan and Aurora. I think it's gonna be a great matchup. Kyler Berkman, 19-1, regardless of where you're playing, who you're playing, 19-1 is not something to sniff about. So Ohio Wesleyan is certainly a team we're familiar with. Like we talked about, Kyler Berkman, son of Salisbury legendary coach Jim Berkman, is the coach there. You know, they've been in the tournament a few times now. They've really done an amazing job of growing that program and getting some great players out in the Chicago area. So, you know, while all that is said, I do think Ohio Wesleyan wins, and we'll await the winner of Denison Illinois Wesleyan, which I will let you pick.
Well, you know, you have no faith. I'm going with Aurora.
Okay.
You know, Berkman knows a thing or two about NCAA tournament heroics. I see that being their big kind of signature win there. You know, so I think it's going to be Aurora versus Denison, but Denison is going to be limping into that with a closer than maybe predicted second round game there on May 9th.
I like that. I'm okay with that.
So this is kind of the spot where I see a little bit of, you know, I have a lot of favorites winning in here, but that's the spot where I see something maybe interesting happening. Moving down, I'm going with Dickinson over Lynchburg, and like I said, I think it's going to be a pretty handily victorious Dickinson team in that game against Lynchburg. No disrespect to Lynchburg, but I think it's just what they had to get through in that tournament. You know, you could certainly take the other side of this argument and say that motivates them even more, but I think it just gets to a point where that hump that they had to get over was just a little bit too much of an uphill battle. They might not have any gas left in the tank for this one. And then they are going to face Washington Lee, which I think is a pretty clear winner there.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, shocker, on the Dickinson-Lynchburg game. I think you want to be playing your best in May, and that's what Lynchburg's doing right now, sort of putting the pieces together, you know, similar to like maybe a North Carolina from 2016, or you want to go football, a 2012 Ravens, or, you know, a New York Giants Super Bowl team in the past. So I'm going to pick Lynchburg. Like I said, you want to be playing your best in May. So I'm going to pick Lynchburg and WNL, and you get that rematch again. You know, that'll be the third game this season that those teams have gone at it. So I think WNL handles Transylvania. That just shouldn't be too much of an issue. So we're looking at a couple rematches here as we get into this third round.
Then going down, we talked about this game earlier in this podcast. I see Christopher Newport beating Roanoke and playing Salisbury, you know, in that kind of rematch of a CAC tournament game. I'm sorry, of a CAC regular season game between the goals and the captains. That's going to be on May 12th. Josh, is that the same you have, or do you have Roanoke?
I really want to pick Christopher Newport because I really like that team. I really like what they've done. You know, I played them in the past. I think Coach Thompson is one of those rising coaches in Division III lacrosse. But just because of experience, and Coach Pilot is like I said, is just such a has been there so many times. I'm going to give the upper hand to Roanoke. I think Christopher Newport comes out a little too much energy, a little, you know, got to settle in a little bit, and I think they dig themselves a little too big of a hole to come back from. And then we get a Roanoke-Salisbury game that I think should be great, but I do think Salisbury wins that one eventually as well.
Awesome. Josh, have you filled out your complete bracket yet?
I have not.
All right, let's do that, and we'll tweet that out with this and put it with the podcast, the story on InsideLacrosse.com.
Love it.
So you can check out our full brackets there and where we're picking. I think given my recent comments in the past month about teams that I favor, I think my championship matchup is pretty clear and pretty predictable. But, you know, who knows, maybe some surprises along the way. But we'll turn this over to someone who's much more interesting than either Josh or I, and that's York coach Brandon Childs, who is going to break down his spot in the bracket. Obviously, a lot of interest around where they were seated and then moving up to the north. And as you'll see, it's a challenge him and his team are willing to take on. Here's Coach Childs. Coach Childs, the York Spartans have had an incredible season, 17-2. You guys are in the Division III tournament, so congrats on that. An odd move, moving up to the north, where you guys have a little bit of a tough road ahead of you. What was your thoughts on Selection Sunday and how things broke out for you?
Yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest, we were all really excited. I think we ended up playing five teams that got their AQ and won the league. And so the likelihood that we were going to see a team that we had already played was pretty high, you know, going into it. And I think we were just excited about a new challenge, quite frankly. So we were pretty excited. And quite honestly, we didn't really like, I don't think any of us started looking. We just looked at the very first team we were playing and just thought, you know, this is great. We get to play somebody new. So that was kind of our initial reaction to Selection Sunday. And I had a feeling that a lot of those pool C bids were going to go to teams in the South. And so it was likely that someone was going to go north and then geographically, you know, I thought we might make sense, but you never, I guess you just never know what's going to happen on that evening. So
nothing encapsulates May like that phrase. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you guys have Western New England coming up in the Division III tournament. What do you know about these guys, and what do you guys have to do to prepare?
Yeah, well, we actually had a film of them earlier in the year getting ready for Nazareth. They had played Nazareth, and we had Nazareth at the Mustang Classic. And so we actually saw them earlier in the year preparing for Naz. So we had we kind of knew a little bit more about them than you would expect, having already watched that film a bunch getting ready for Nazareth. And I think they're well coached. They play fast. They've got some good athletes all over the field and a pretty good faceoff guy and a good kid in the goal. So they're definitely going to present a whole host of challenges for us. And like I said, our guys are excited, for the opportunity.
You know, that's a great attitude that it seems like you guys are taking, you know, looking at this as a new challenge. How do you, when people say you guys are the biggest snub of the tournament and things like that, how do you try to block that out? Do you try to embrace it? How do you just kind of take the outside chatter and not have it affect what you do internally?
Yeah, I mean, with all due respect to the teams that are in our path, and I don't mean it as literal as it sounds, but, you know, we like to think that they're disappointed that York got sent to the North, not York's disappointed that they got sent to the North, and we think we have a good team, we're confident in ourselves. And so, there's two ways to look at it, and we're looking at it as though, I wouldn't want to be Western New England, Amherst, RIT, or Tufts right now, as opposed to, I wouldn't want to be York right now. There's nobody else we'd rather be than York right now. So that's our attitude. It's unanimous through the whole roster.
Fitting with the theme of the story I did on you guys a few years ago, iron sharpens iron. You got to play the best to be the best. And when you look at your conference, you guys, a three-bid league, Christopher Newport and Salisbury, both in this NCAA Division III tournament, that's got to be validating about, just everything you've seen day in, day out in your conference.
Yeah, actually, the first thing I did when the selection show was over was I sent a text to Mikey Thompson down at CNU. I was really excited for him and his team and his program. They've worked really hard. I think they're a great team, and I was really excited to see that they were in it. And, I just think it wasn't that long ago when, a couple leagues in Division III kind of really dominated the scene, and it's exciting to see that the CAC is getting three teams into the tournament and on the national level. And there's other good teams in our league that didn't make the tournament that certainly helped our teams, the three that are in, kind of get sharper as the year goes on. So, we love the league that we're in.
Taking a broader look, what does this just overall bracket say about Division III lacrosse, kind of the talent from top to bottom there?
Yeah, it was interesting. You start to try to figure out who you might play and everything. And every team that you think you might play, you kind of cringe, they're pretty good. I don't know if I want to see that team, and there's a lot of them, and so the landscape's so different. Everybody can play, and I guess I honestly believe, I don't know how many great teams there are. There's not that one team. I think this is the year where you just get that feeling like anybody can beat anybody. And so, using Lynchburg as an example, we played Lynchburg, and, they played so many good teams and came up short by a goal here, a goal there, and they faced some injuries. And now, they go on this, tear at the end. They win their league, and I don't know how many people would be too excited to play a team like Lynchburg, and on a Wednesday first round game. So, those teams like Lynchburg exist all over the place. Franklin and Marshall, I've seen on film a bunch. And they didn't get selected, but they can flat out score some goals. So, I don't think anybody would have been too excited to see FNM and so on and so forth. So, those are a couple of the teams that I'm familiar with, having watched a lot of film that are examples. I'm sure there's countless others, and it's just, that's what everybody wants, is to be a tournament where every game is going to be a nail biter, and I think that's what we're moving closer to in Division III.
You guys, this season has been, a very strong season for you guys, 17-2. The CAC championship game, you guys played Salisbury and lost the CAC championship. 11-8. You know, I was at that game that you guys played Salisbury in late March, and you pretty much dominated the Seagulls, which doesn't happen a lot from any team in this sport. How difficult is it to beat those guys twice?
Yeah, well, first, I think it's difficult to beat anybody twice. So it's tough. And you know, Coach Berthman's a great coach, and he's got a great staff. So if you beat him once, they're going to get their work and take away those things that you did well, you know. And, naturally, you know, they're going to be prepared for everything that we do, whether you beat them the first time or not, you know. So, but nevertheless, it's not easy to beat anybody twice. It's not easy to beat them twice. And I thought at times on Saturday we did a lot of really good things, and we struggled to clear the ball, and we've been great clearing. We're clearing it at like 91% this year, and we struggled in the clear. And I don't know how much of it was Salisbury doing anything special in the ride. It was just us playing a little tight, and it hurt us, you know. And to me, that was the biggest difference between game one and game two. And I think it was a little self-inflicted, and we'll get to work here on the, on our clearing and make sure that that doesn't happen again moving forward here.
Last time you guys lost was to Gettysburg in early March, and then you guys rattled off 13 straight wins after that. Facing a loss is, you know, I know no one wants to lose, but can it be a blessing, you know, losing it there as opposed to, you know, this coming week or 2 weeks from now, maybe stuff you can learn and kind of build from adversity?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think so. I think in human nature, you know, you lose one, just your human nature is to come back, you know, and respond to it. So I think in that aspect it helps. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm not happy that we lost on Saturday. You know, I care a lot about our team. I care a whole lot about our senior class. And, you know, I would have loved for our seniors to go out with a conference championship. So, so I can't quite say, you know, in a weird way, I'm glad it happened. But there's no doubt that it will sharpen our focus, I think, here, you know, leading into this week and hopefully, you know, beyond that.
Speaking of adversity, you know, one of the things I think is remarkable about this team is, you know, you had Brendan McGrath go down in March, and he's a special player, a special talent, and, you know, that you guys didn't really skip a beat. You know, you won on that 13-game winning streak after he got injured. How has the team, you know, kind of further gelled since his injury, and how did facing that adversity, you know, maybe bring this group a little bit closer together, and how did it help you?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is Brendan's been great. He's been really, really helping Jake Kavazda, who has stepped into his role for us. And he's just been, you know, Brendan has just handled the adversity himself really, really well. And that's kind of set the example of how the rest of the team's going to handle it. But Brendan actually was out in the fall with an injury. He had a shoulder injury in the fall and didn't play fall ball. And so we played in the fall without him. And in retrospect, at the time, you know, I was like, I just wish he was playing, you know. And in retrospect, it might have been the best thing that happened. And so when we had to make that, you know, adjustment, we had done it for 4 weeks in the fall. And I think that helped a lot as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, I guess I try hard not to say next man up. I think it's a little overused, but that's how our guys just treated it, you know. And we believe in everyone on our roster. And when you get your opportunity, you're gonna make the best out of it. And I think that's all that's really happened.
Coach, and you are a professional podcaster as well, in addition to your coaching. How's the podcast you've been doing on the Inside the Cross network of podcasts been treating you? And what's the feedback been like?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been really fun. Ryan, who I do it with, who played for me, I love so much. And he loves coaching so much and got out of it to pursue a career as a firefighter, which is just Brian to a T. And getting to talk to Ryan about coaching and leadership, it almost feels like Tuesdays with Maury every time that we talk. And I just love the time spent with him. And it's, you know, weird that we have an audience. But nevertheless, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from that audience talking about things beyond the X's and O's. And it all kind of started, I did a podcast for him, and we got all these emails about, you know, from people who enjoyed it. And we just kind of came up with this idea of doing a podcast, you know, on coaching, but outside of, you know, the X's and O's and schemes, and more on some of the things that happened throughout the course of the year and how to, you know, how to navigate that. And it's been a lot of fun, and I think it's helped me. You know, there's times where I dig a little deeper into a book or something to make a point on the podcast that we end up using with our team, you know, later that week. So it's been really enjoyable, and you know, I appreciate Inside Lacrosse for kind of providing the platform for us.
My last question was actually just that about, you know, you referenced a lot of books that you use as kind of reference material within each podcast episode. Is there anything you're reading right now that is really grabbing you?
No, not right now. Right now I've been watching a lot of lacrosse film and taken away from my reading a little bit. And with technology and everything on the bus ride, that used to be my good time to get some reading in, and now you can just pop up some games and watch. But I read a little excerpt from a book yesterday on mental toughness. The book's called Think Like a Champion. It's got like 110 topics that are about a page and a half. Topic number 65 is mental toughness. I read from that last night, so that one's fresh in my mind. So that's the one that's kind of fresh in my mind right now that I read yesterday, but there isn't one that I just put down that I could rave about today.
Well, Coach, we'll have plenty of time for reading in June after you guys are done your NCAA championship run, possibly. So thanks for taking some time to come on the Inside Lacrosse podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate it.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.